Today is Wednesday, October 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, North Korea launches more projectiles ahead of planned talks with the United States this weekend.
They combine these launches that raise tensions with what we'd call charm offensives.
Also ahead, House Democrats move to sidestep Secretary of State Mike Pompeo after he refuses to abide by subpoenas. And the latest update from Hong Kong after one protester was shot and critically wounded yesterday. Those stories and more next. North Korea has tested what appears to be a submarine-launched ballistic missile. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, it's an important advancement in Pyongyang's weapons program and a major provocation, just days ahead of working-level nuclear talks with the United States.
It is North Korea's 11th ballistic missile test since May, but this launch is notable for several reasons. Unlike other tests this year, this one does not appear to be short-range, though the actual maximum range isn't clear. And it may have been fired from a submarine, making it easier to hide and harder to intercept. The launch also came just hours after North Korea announced long-delayed working-level talks with the United States. Those talks are set for Saturday. Former U.S. diplomat Mintaro Oba says it is not unusual for the North to send mixed messages.
The North Koreans have a long history of juggling carrots and sticks. They combine these launches that raise tensions with what we'd call charm offensives, and that's exactly what we saw today.
But Oba says North Korea may be emboldened by President Donald Trump, who has said he has no problem with North Korea's past short-range launches.
The North Koreans see someone unique, someone new in President Trump, someone who might be more flexible about their missile launches, and so they see a golden opportunity to normalize these shorter-range missile launches, even while negotiations are ongoing.
It is not clear if Trump will be able to shrug off this test, the same as he did the others. Others in the region are expressing concern. South Korea's government voiced strong concern at the launch. Japanese Prime Minister Abe Shinzo said the launches violate United Nations Security Council resolutions. Abe is likely to be especially upset at the latest launch, as one of the missiles landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Now, to learn more about the launch and how they may affect those talks coming up this weekend, I'm joined by RAND Corporation's senior international and defense researcher, Bruce Bennett. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
So, Bruce, what do you make out of the timing of this launch, given that North Korea said that the United States needed to change its approach to talks, and then it was announced that we have working-level talks coming up planned for this Saturday, and now a launch?
Well, North Korea's been trying to get the United States to provide it with concessions. We have to recognize that after the Hanoi summit, Kim Jong-un purged about 20 of his senior leaders out of his foreign policy community. So nobody's particularly anxious to go talk with him about meeting with the Americans unless they've got some concession to bring along. We don't know what concession's been offered to get the talk started this Saturday, but something. And now what we're seeing is the North is trying to increase the pressure on us to make more concessions by essentially telling us, look, we can make things a lot worse. We can test more missiles like this. So you want to have tensions like existed back in 2016 and 2017, you keep up the sanctions.
But is it really an upping of any kind of pressure on the United States, given that President Trump says that he's only concerned about intercontinental ballistic missiles and nuclear testing, that these short-range tests, even the submersible missile launches, are part of the, you know, aren't covered by the agreement that Kim Jong-un made to him? So does it change the calculation of who has an upper hand in discussions?
Well, we have to remember that President Trump has chosen to focus on the commitment that he wants to from Kim. In early March in 2018, Kim offered to meet with President Trump and do a summit meeting. And as part of that offer that he made to the South Korean National Security Advisor, he promised no missile launches, zero, not just long range, no missile launches. So Kim's violated the offer that he made in order to get the original summit with President Trump on multiple occasions, violated the UN Security Council resolutions. So this is a case where we've got an unreliable partner for negotiations. Does it matter? Is it really right that these short-range tests don't matter? Well, the United States has a lot of troops in the region. At Camp Humphreys, the major U.S. military base in Korea, there are some 40,000 Americans. One North Korean submarine-launched missile with a nuclear weapon could kill most of those. That would be over 10 times the results of Pearl Harbor. I think the president needs to be concerned about that.
You brought up the idea that perhaps the United States might be making some concessions to get further reduction in activity from North Korea. What could the United States offer to North Korea to get them to move forward on denuclearization?
Well, the thing that Kim is looking for is sanctions relief in the short term. His elites basically have become businessmen, the senior elites. And as long as there are sanctions, many of them are going broke and going into bankruptcy. So he has promised them that he will get sanctions relief, that they will begin to be able to trade coal and get oil in more freely and so forth. Those are the things he's likely going to target. But he may just get the reopening of the Kaesong Industrial Complex, which in the past has made the regime a lot of money that they could spend on their nuclear programs.
Bruce Bennett is Senior International and Defense Researcher at the RAND Corporation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to.
As State Department officials prepare to meet with congressional investigators today about Ukraine, U.S. President Donald Trump is tweeting out that he's the subject of a coup. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn starts us off.
Tensions are escalating between the legislative and executive branches over the accusation Ukraine's leader was pressed to dig up political dirt. Now President Trump has tweeted out he's concluding that what is taking place is not an impeachment, but a coup intended to take away the power of the people. Generally, a coup is a sudden and violent overthrow of a government. Trump's comments come as the State Department's Inspector General is set to brief several House and Senate committees that are seeking documents on Ukraine. The Inspector General acts independently of the Secretary of State, who in this case is trying to block Democrats from questioning career officials in the department. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
In a press conference this afternoon, U.S. President Donald Trump continued to say that his call with the Ukraine president was perfect and he did nothing wrong. And speaking in Italy, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has acknowledged that he was on the telephone call that triggered the impeachment investigation into the presidency. But during an interview last week on ABC News' This Week, Mr. Pompeo was vague about what he knew about that call. In addition, the State Department's Inspector General is also expected to meet with the staff of the House and Senate Appropriations, Oversight, Foreign Affairs, and Intelligence Committees to discuss documents that the lawmakers have requested as they probe the July phone call between Trump and President Zelensky. Plus, House Democrats say they will subpoena White House for Ukraine documents, citing flagrant disregard of requests. Now, to dive deeper into the latest impeachment inquiry developments and increasing rhetoric being used, I spoke earlier with Joel Richard Paul, professor at the University of California Hastings Law School. Joel, where I want to begin today is with the rhetoric. President Trump has called this presidential harassment. He tweeted that it could lead to a civil war if he was removed from office. He's attacked the whistleblower and most recently likened the impeachment proceedings, the impeachment inquiry to a coup. How do you respond to those kinds of statements coming from the Oval Office?
Well, this kind of hyperbolic rhetoric, I think, is very disconcerting. It is a constitutional procedure that we're now engaged in, not a coup. It's not a violent, sudden overtake of the government. And the president's authority to act in this situation. Really, should not politicize the organs of the executive branch. I mean, I think the most disconcerting aspect of the crisis now is that the president is using all of the levers of the executive branch in a way to gain some kind of partisan advantage. And that has, I think, unfortunately dragged the Departments of State, the Department of Justice, into this crisis.
Is his tactic of trying to make this partisan working? Because these tweets are really designed to go to his base and foster that kind of support. But when you talk to some Republicans, whether they be governors or members of the Senate Intel and Judiciary Committee, they will come out and say that this is the process, and based on what they've seen with the unredacted complaints and reports, that this is something that should be investigated.
Yeah, well, it is, of course, inherently a political process. I think the difficulty now is that we expect the Department of Justice and the Department of State to stay outside of the political partisan process that's now taking place, and unfortunately they've been dragged into it. I think that ultimately the House impeachment inquiry is going to move forward. I think that the discussion about hearsay, the claim that mm-hmm. it's reliant on hearsay is simply an obfuscation, that in fact the evidence that the House is relying on is not the claims of the whistleblower, but rather the documents themselves and the statements made by President Trump and by his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and now by the Secretary of State, that they all acknowledge this call that was made, and the language is quite clear.
What do you make of the House committee subpoenaing the White House for failure to comply with delivering the documents? We have the Inspector General for the State Department testifying on Wednesday later this afternoon. We have the IG for the intelligence community scheduled. We have more and more people who are related to this complaint coming forward and requesting to testify.
Right. And of course, we don't know what they're going to testify about. I'm a bit alarmed by the statement that the Inspector General for the Department of State has called an urgent meeting with the staffs of 8 Senate and House committees today to provide them with some documents or talk to them about something having to do with Ukraine. I think all of this is alarming. And, you know, there's another point here. And all of this is taking place in the backdrop of larger events that are occurring in Ukraine itself. Yesterday, the President Zelensky announced that he would allow, he was basically making a concession to the Russians to hold elections in the Russian-occupied eastern portion of Ukraine. And that suggests that he was under some pressure.
Joel Richard Paul is a law professor at the University of California at Hastings. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Steve.
And in 2020 campaign news, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has halted campaigning for president after being hospitalized on Tuesday with chest pains that required doctors to insert 2 stents after finding a blockage in 1 artery. You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The World Health Organization says the emergence and rapid growth of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, known as superbugs, are a serious worldwide health concern. Most scientists have placed the blame in the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria on the overuse of antibiotics to treat both humans and livestock for various ailments. New research conducted by British and Spanish scientists have found evidence that cigarette smoke can cause MRSA superbug strains to become even more resistant to antibiotics. The researchers found that the cigarette smoke stresses MRSA superbugs. The stress causes the already antibiotic-resistant bacteria to send out emergency signals, which increases the rate of mutation in microbial DNA that produces robust and tenacious variants that can better resist antibiotics. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. After a Hong Kong student was shot by police during massive pro-democracy demonstrations Tuesday, there were growing concerns that the government is condoning the excessive use of force in minor clashes with activists and that police officials are justifying lethal force by equating the protests with terrorism. VOA's Brian Patton reports.
More than 100 people were injured during Tuesday's mass demonstrations in Hong Kong, during which police fired water cannons and tear gas to disperse crowds, and some protesters armed with rocks and even homemade gasoline bombs attacked police. In one skirmish that was captured on video, an 18-year-old student was shot by a police officer. A police spokesman said the shooting was justified as the officer was being attacked by protesters and felt his life was under serious threat. Neither side in this dispute seems willing to compromise, even facing the prospect of increasingly violent clashes in the near future. Brian Patton, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Now, the police in Hong Kong have warned that the city is on, in their terms, the verge of extreme danger. October 1st violent protests resulted in more than 200 people being arrested. Police stated that they used a record 1,400 rounds of tear gas, 900 rubber bullets, 230 sponge rounds, 190 beanbag rounds, and 5 live rounds as warning shots during the confrontations. After 4 months of demonstrations, Hong Kong's anti-government protesters are increasingly focusing their anger on mainland Chinese businesses and those with pro-Beijing links. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has that part of the story.
As Hong Kong mopped up after a day of violence, it became clear that companies linked to the Chinese mainland are becoming the focus of ongoing protester anger. Graffiti and posters have increased along their marching routes, and the morning after another day of clashes, crews worked quickly to either scrub it clean or cover it up until they could. The corporate targets are well known in the city. At least 2 Bank of China ATMs were set on fire Tuesday. Some Starbucks outlets were also vandalized. While the brand is an American coffee chain, it's locally operated by Maxim's Caterers. That's become a target after the daughter of the company's founder condemned protesters at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. The city's MTR rail system also shut down 50 stations Tuesday, ostensibly to stop protester movements. That made them a target for demonstrators who blame the company for doing the bidding of the government. Hong Kong is an Asian base for many global businesses, but companies are walking a thin line between protesters and China's Communist Party rulers in Beijing. One of the earliest and biggest names to struggle with that has been Cathay Pacific. In August, China demanded the airline suspend staff involved in the protests. Since then, both the CEO and chairman have resigned, and Cathay's share price was pummeled. The Hong Kong Confederation of Trade Unions says at least 20 of the company's pilots and cabin crew have since been fired.
And that was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. Ex-Israeli military chief Benny Gantz called off Wednesday's meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in another setback in efforts to form a unity government. Gantz said the preconditions for the talks were not met, but he said a meeting could be rescheduled for later this week. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sent what he says is Britain's final offer for a Brexit deal to the European Union today, as the date for Britain's departure from the bloc looms in less than a month. Johnson says the proposal is a fair and reasonable compromise, but it's likely to face deep skepticism from EU leaders who doubt London has a workable plan to avoid checks on goods or people crossing the border between the EU member Ireland and the UK's Northern Ireland after Brexit. The Irish Prime Minister said that he had not yet received the new British proposal on the terms of its departure from the European Union, but that British officials had briefed their Irish counterparts and the details were not encouraging. The EU said it would give the British proposal serious legal vetting before saying whether it is worthy of being a basis for further talks on the UK's departure. U.S. Special Envoy for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, and Taliban political negotiators have arrived in neighboring Pakistan amid a renewed diplomatic push to resurrect peace talks between Washington and the insurgent group. The Taliban delegation arrived in Islamabad early Wednesday after the Khalilzad team landed in the Pakistani capital. Both teams will stay in the country for several days. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees has announced this year's Nansen Refugee Award. The winner is a Kurdish human rights lawyer who has helped more than 10,000 stateless people to gain Kurdish nationality. Lisa Schlein has more.
More than 10 million people around the world are stateless. Many in countries such as Myanmar, Turkey, the Dominican Republic, and Zimbabwe live in a state of limbo. They are deprived of the basic rights of citizenship. They have no right to work, to get an education, health care, to get married, or be registered at birth. They have been described as national ghosts. Kyrgyzstan is the first country in the world to eliminate statelessness. Azizbek Ashurov, this year's Nansen laureate, did a great deal to make this happen. He and his organization, Fergana Valley Lawyers Without Borders, have helped more than 10,000 people gain Kyrgyz nationality. After the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, many people became stranded in newly formed states. Their Soviet passports were invalid, and they had no way to prove where they were born. Ashurov and his family were among those who had become stateless. He says it was motivated to change his family's situation and to help thousands of others regain their nationality. He tells VOA, the first big challenge facing him and his team was to persuade the government that ending statelessness would be of benefit to both the people and the country.
On practical level, actually, our teams was included officers from the passport desk from the government. And they worked together with us and visited rural areas, mountain territories, sometimes on the horses. So now, after 5 years, we done first step. We end existing cases of statelessness in my country.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi praises Ashurov's achievement. He notes this is the first time the Nansen Award has been given to a champion of the stateless.
We've never done it before. It was always more related to displacement and refugees. So we want to really celebrate with Azizbek's work a personal commitment and a commitment of an organization to reducing this very negative phenomenon around the world.
Ashurov's job is far from over. He and his foundation have formed mobile legal teams which go to remote areas of the Central Asian country in search of vulnerable, socially marginalized groups to help them regularize their situation. He says his foundation also is working to help thousands of other stateless people throughout the region escape their legal limbo by becoming citizens of their countries with all the benefits that confers upon them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And finally, the United States won approval on Wednesday to impose tariffs on $7.5 billion worth of European goods over illegal EU subsidies given to Airbus, threatening to trigger a tit-for-tat transatlantic trade war as the global economy falters. The decision by the World Trade Organization pushes a 15-year corporate dispute over support for transatlantic plane giants to the center of the caustic world trade relations and comes on top of a tariff war between Washington and Beijing. The European Commission said that a U.S. move to impose trade sanctions on EU imports would be short-sighted and counterproductive and risk causing damage on both sides of the Atlantic. In addition, the Federal Aviation Administration in the U.S. ordered inspections on Boeing 737 NG aircraft for structural cracks after Boeing discovered the problem on planes undergoing modifications, according to the agency. The mandate affects 1,911 U.S. registered aircraft and is expected to require about 165 planes to be inspected within 7 days. The NG is a precursor plane to the Boeing 737 MAX, which has been grounded since mid-March following two deadly crashes. And with that, that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Rob McLean, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for listening. Now, you'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news on our website. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.